our next guest joins us every other Thursday and is the House Minority Leader. Let's welcome back to the program. It's Themis Claridis. Themis, good morning.
Good morning. Nice song again.
Oh, well, hey, we aim to please here.
I know.
It's Yacht Rock Month. Do you know what Yacht Rock is?
Yes, I do. I listen to it all the time on my radio.
God.
There you Sirius XM radio.
Oh, we don't like to talk about Sirius on here.
Sorry, but I don't my Yacht Rock.
Okay. All right. No, it's good stuff. I agree with you. I like it. Because it's a summery type of music, and that's what we figure we
First of all, just the name of it makes you feel happy, right?
Yes. Very true. Very true.
Which I think is the whole point of it. But.
Oh, yeah. It puts you in a good mood.
Yep.
I feel like hanging out at my yacht.
Exactly.
So, listen, we were talking with you a couple of weeks ago. I'm on the possibilities of a special session later on this month. Now, since then, a lot has occurred regarding the police and police relations and African Americans and those who are feeling disenchanted and disengaged and disenfranchised and all the disses. And, there's speculation I was reading in the paper, oh my goodness, probably a few times over the last couple of weeks, that there may be a police bill that would also be voted on in this special session. And not that, listen, we'd love to see an oversight board. I think you'd have to crack open the union agreement and maybe to do that. And that I would imagine would take some time. But even that aside, wouldn't you like to have public hearings on any of these police bills rather than just go in, have a bill written, and vote on it without it being properly vetted and having a public hearing? What's your take?
Yes, that's actually the plan. Right now, for the past two to three weeks, the leaders of the legislature have charged their leaders of the Judiciary Committee, so the two Democrat chairmen and the two Republican ranking members, so the four leaders of the Judiciary Committee, with negotiations on this police accountability bill. They've been actually working very closely, and at this point, fingers crossed, the bill is supposed to be bipartisan, and they've gotten pretty far on it in regards to concepts. Obviously, fleshing that out is the difficult part, right? And the devil's in the details.
Always.
But the plan is to have public hearings. Now, those public hearings aren't going to be the same as we've usually seen because of COVID and social distancing, et cetera, and how many people could be in the building at the same time. But we're working on that plan right now to try and have public hearings for these bills, because I agree, they're very, very important.
Do you feel, though, that because it's a special session and not the natural course or the natural process of a regular session, that it could be rushed?
Well, that's not the intention, right? I mean, listen, it's normally a bill goes has a public hearing, and then the committee votes on it, and then it gets to the House and it gets to the Senate floor. For me, the most important thing with this is the public is able to put their opinions on the table.
Uh-huh.
and have a public hearing and be heard. And this has been really difficult, obviously, for the past several months because of COVID, and that's why sessions stopped, and therefore no bills went through, and so there were no public hearings necessary because
right.
we didn't do anything. But this is a big deal, and unfortunately, we saw a tragedy occur in Minnesota, and it brought everything to the surface. And everybody's taking this very seriously. You know, I've said to our caucus many times that we take this seriously. We want to make sure everybody is treated equally. There should be no color. There should be no religion. There should be no right sexual orientation when somebody is looked at by a police officer. But we also, we support the good police officers, which are obviously the majority of them. You can do both. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pick one. This isn't pick one and the other one is bad. These are two very important issues, and they should be treated as such. And that's why I'm very happy with how the Judiciary Committee leaders have been sitting down and coming to important decisions from their perspective. But then, of course, they have to come to the four caucuses and then you know, a hearing will be had and we'll be voting on something. And that is the plan at this point, to vote on something at the end of July.
The end of July. And I'll get to that in a second. I know it wouldn't be prudent to discuss right now. It's very prematurely, you know, what the language of that bill would entail specifically. And I get that. And I completely understand it. However, there's one issue in particular, and it has to do with something I just referenced a moment ago, and that is an oversight board rather than having the union protect someone who has, you know, a half a dozen or more strikes against them, if you know what I mean. I mean, you know, being written up a number of times. I think that's paramount in the perspective of constituents. Is that being addressed, or does that take union cooperation?
Everything is on the table. It's a question of, you know how this process works. Somebody can say, I would like XYZ, and somebody else at the table says, oh, that's a non-starter to me. Or somebody else can say, I like ABC, and say, well, I don't like it in that form, but maybe we can do it in a modified way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the question here and the goal, at least from my perspective, is going to be, how do we make sure everybody is treated fairly in the way they deserve,
mm-hmm.
and civil rights are being protected, but also make sure this is not one-sided, that people that are good cops, they're doing the right thing, are being treated as such, and people that are not doing the right thing are being treated as such, just like anybody else in this society. So this has to be balanced, but we have done a lot in this legislature, as you know,
mm-hmm.
Towards this goal, but there is always a lot more to do, and we're here to listen and find out how we make this better, but so everybody is treated fairly, and this is not a one-sided bill.
You know, for a long time, chokeholds have been used not only by, you know, Connecticut police, but police departments across the nation. And now, of course, in light of what's happened in Minneapolis with Mr. Floyd, George Floyd, that's now, it seems to be possibly eliminated nationwide. Has that been discussed at all?
Yes, it is certainly a topic of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And let's remember, POST, which is the Police Officer Standards Training, they have addressed this issue already publicly, I think a week or so ago, in regards to this type of action not being supported. So, you know, there's a combination of things. There's a combination of things as to what police officers are trained to do and not do as we speak, right?
Uh-huh.
And whether they do it, but what the ramifications of them doing it are, right? So, for example, just use chokeholds as an example, and this is just a hypothetical.
Uh-huh.
If right now they're not supposed to be using them, but they do, what are the ramifications now? Maybe in law, there's not enough, there are not enough consequences. And I just use that as a hypothetical. There are not enough consequences. So this is kind of about what police training is and what the law follows up with. So maybe it's too much, maybe it's not enough. But that's our job, I think, a big job with us as lawmakers, to make sure we look at what does Police Academy teach? Do we think it's strong enough? Do we think it's too strong? Do we want to follow it up with law? Is it followed up with law now but not enough? I mean, I think those two go hand in hand.
Yeah. We are speaking with House Minority Leader Themis Claridis. You mentioned that special session would occur sometime towards the end of the month. Now, would that take place in waves? I mean, I know the size of the chamber, and there's 151 members of the House, and that's not, you know, that's not to mention the clerks and the aides and, you know, and the others that are oftentimes in the House chamber during voting session. Do you anticipate, you know, maybe waves of 20 or 30 for voting? And then if that were to occur, how would a debate be handled if not everybody is in the room at the same time?
Well, that's an excellent question, and that's something where, you know, we have to figure out when the time gets closer. Now, what we have done during this downtime obsession is put in new, we added to the voting machines we have the ability to vote remotely. Now, by remotely, I only mean in the legislative office building or the Capitol. So, because to your point, there's 151 representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's legislative aides. Then there's clerks. Then there's general staff. You know, obviously there's guests on any given day. So there's 200 people, two or more, 100 people that could be in that chamber at a given time. Clearly, we can't do that right now because we're not going to do anything different in our job that we tell the public to not do. And so if people are able to stay in their legislative office building offices and vote from there, or say in a caucus room that where we split people up, or the big rooms like the old judiciary, old appropriations rooms in the Capitol, we're going to split people up as best we can and then allow certain people to come in the chamber at a certain time. For example, if Gary Byron hits his button from his office and says, I would like to speak on this bill, then we may, I mean, this is just a possibility. We've talked about it, several options, and we're going to make these decisions in the House rules when we go into special session, because those are the rules we live by in session. I may go in there and say, okay, who sits next to Gary Byron on either side, and ask those people to leave if they're in there.
Okay.
So you can then come in and be socially distanced from whoever's next to you, and you can have your ability to speak and debate and ask questions.
Wow.
So that's just one thing we've looked at, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of choreography, but obviously if we're asking the public to do certain things, we should certainly be doing the same.
What else would be on the agenda other than budget tweaks and the police accountability bill? Is there anything else?
No, this is right now the what we have agreed to is the police accountability bill and the absentee ballot issue for November.
Yeah.
There has been nothing else agreed to for this particular session.
Speaking of the absentee bill, I don't know about you.
When I say agreed to, I mean the Democrats are insisting they have to do it, and we don't really have a choice in regards to whether we do it or not.
Well, no, they rule the roost. You know, they've been in power for 40 years and of the legislature, and, you know, let's face it, they've got the numbers on their side. So, I mean, if that's what they want to do, they, like I said, they rule the roost, and they can call the shots. But speaking of that, a couple of days ago, I received something in the mail asking me if I would like an application for an absentee ballot. And the first thing I thought of, it's in light of the COVID, you know, where if somebody was afraid to go out and vote on election day. And of course, I think we're a little premature on this because we don't know how things will be come November 3rd. You know, that's still 4 months away. So number one, that raises a flag. I think it's just extremely premature. The other thing that concerns me the most is it opens up the potential for fraud, for one person to vote multiple times. If they have roommates or live with their family or live with somebody who may not be aware of things, let's just put it that way. Are you nervous about that?
Yes. I mean, let me just say something off the top before we get into this a little more. Certainly, I certainly agree that people who have concerns about their health or being around other people in this very difficult time we're having should be able to have the option to vote by absentee ballot.
Oh, sure.
We agreed to that for this August primary season, right? We agreed to it in June to move the initial presidential primary from April to June for that reason. We are now agreeing to it for this. I do think it is early for the November election because we don't know where we will be. You know, we've gotten a lot of postcards and letters, et cetera, saying we shouldn't have to choose between our health and for our, you know, and voting. And of course I agree with that. Everybody should have every opportunity to vote. We're the ones that complain all the time, as you hear, that enough people don't vote. But there also has to be precautions. I mean, we've seen a lot of fraud going on. We've seen in Bridgeport and Hartford, you know, and all these things. We've seen, you know, people in this state two or a couple of years ago getting ballots from the election year before. You know, we've seen, you know, we saw what happened in Stratford where people walked into a polling place and got a ballot from a different polling place, didn't even get their state rep ballot, couldn't vote for the person that's actually running for their district. So, you know, people screaming, yeah, when we mention, oh, we're worried about fraud. But there has been fraud, and there's been examples of fraud. This is not drama when we say these things. But we want to make sure that we do this in a safe and real way. So, you know, we've been discussing it. We've been at the table discussing it with our colleagues. But it's just got to make sure it's done the right way. I mean, I've three people have contacted me saying they got those letters that you got,
mm-hmm.
saying, would you like an absentee ballot? Three different people have contacted you just from our caucus saying they've gotten those letters to their home, to them and their husbands or wives or spouses or siblings or kids,
mm-hmm.
and then other ones to the same home for people who lived there 10 years ago.
Oh, jeez. Oh, is that
okay,
right?
So this is the problem, right? This is the issue. These are not made-up concerns, you know? Right now, under our absentee ballot, and let's remember this. If we want to change our absentee ballot, the ability to vote by absentee, that is a constitutional change. The state of Connecticut Constitution allows you that ability.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be debated in full during regular session. We did it last year in discussing early voting, right? And the early voting bill that we voted on was effectively an absentee ballot bill, and a lot of Republicans voted for that. Okay, we believe in as much access as possible. So this isn't really a Republican-Democrat thing as they'd like to make it seem. This is a we want to do this right thing.
Yeah.
And so we take this up, and here's my problem. Well, if we pass this for November, what's the end game here?
Right.
When does it end?
Exactly.
Does it end? Is it only for the November election and then it stops and then regular session begins next year and it is debated as a constitutional amendment as our Constitution demands?
Well, that depends on what the language reads.
Right, exactly. And they said, well, it'll be as long as the health emergency exists. They go, and who decides that? You?
No. Crazy.
Yes, that's the problem.
We're speaking with House Minority Leader Themis Claridis. I only got a couple of minutes left. But see, so we have that, and then let's just contrast that against an announcement that was made about a few days ago or last week, end of last week, regarding schools opening, the buildings, in other words, opening on whatever the first day happens to be in whatever town that you reside in. So, in other words, we can open up the buildings for school, and on the first day of school, kids are going to come in, but yet we're saying, well, maybe you can't come to vote. It's almost like people are picking winners and losers here. And in talking out of both sides of your mouth when it comes to how these decisions are being made, what's allowed to open and what you shouldn't be doing, you know?
I mean, that certainly can be looked at in that way. I mean, the problem is talking about schools opening, I think we've all agreed. I mean, most people have agreed that, you know, although we've done the best we can with this remote learning, such a large percentage of kids just haven't gotten any learning, particularly in the urban centers.
Yeah.
Right? Because it takes a lot of parental and family involvement to make sure that's done right. It takes a lot of effort.
Absolutely. I agree completely.
And so getting these kids back to school is important in the safest way we can get them back. You know, because unfortunately, I mean, let's be honest, voting can be done in a way that is a mail-in ballot, as long as the proper precautions are in place, but these kids haven't learned properly by remote learning.
All right.
So it is. I mean, it is. It's certainly, I mean, I can argue both sides is my point. You're